Committee on Thursday, May 4th, 2017. And before we get started, I'd like to congratulate Rep. Hurd on his recent addition to his family. And, hey, for Hurd.
Hey. Ezra.
And also, excellent job.
Didn't have much to do with it.
Excellent job on the floor yesterday, too. So.
That's a matter of opinion. So thank you, Mr.
Take
Chair.
The thank you.
Oh, I do. I do take the thank you. Or the.
And I can see that this subject matter today has really captivated our committee. Sorry. Rep. Clem is off at another, he's speaking somewhere, at another hearing, and Rep. Solman is excused, and I have no idea where the other two folks are. So we're going to go ahead and get started. We are actually very interested in this topic, finding out more. And so I'm going to head and open an informational hearing on higher ed and capital construction projects. And if we could have John, if you and Greg could come up. Did Greg make it back up?
He did not.
So we get,
all we get is
twice as much of John.
That would be great.
And Greg Hammond, for the record, was up here the other day. We were on the floor just way too long to even start the hearing. If John, can you kind of give us an overview of how this process works? I mean, we're going to hear about the projects, but how that list comes together. Can you kind of review that for us?
Mm-hmm. Chair Reardon, members of the committee, for the record, John Wyckoff, Deputy Director of the Oregon Community College Association. And I will, in fact, begin by talking about our process and how we build our project list. And to begin, I think it's important just giving a little bit of history. The first time, basically since the community colleges were sort of first built in Oregon, that we had received state funding, state match funding for our Article 11G bonds was in the 2007 legislative session. That was basically the first time that community colleges have been put into the mix of capital construction with a state match. And I think it's really, really important to note that, I mean, in that gap between sort of the 60s and the 70s, there was not a whole lot of expansion going on or rebuilding at many of the community colleges. We have on many of our campuses buildings that are 40 and 50 years
old. You've inspired a question already?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. John, if I believe, didn't the bill came out of 2005? Create the list and everything.
I believe the first time we were funded was 2007, and then we came back in the first short session in 2008 to get funding for Clatsop Community College because they had a building that was so not up to code that they were about to lose their accreditation.
Thank you.
Make sure I'm correct on that.
I think it was Republican leadership in the House.
but it hasn't been very long.
But it was up until around that time, the state simply did not participate. And for the colleges, that really just meant they could not update facilities. They could not have the necessary modern, relevant, up to date facilities that they have. The way that our colleges go about creating their list, and I included the criteria as a piece that you should have as an exhibit. It's not part of the PowerPoint, but I just wanted to show you the criteria that they use. And what we do is the colleges each create a tier one and a tier two project, and then on the tier one, a group of presidents working with CCWD blind ranks the list. They go through looking at the criteria and score each project, and then that creates the ranking for our projects. Up until two sessions ago, we're generally getting about half our list funded per session for a couple sessions. And would come back every session to sort of get the second half of the list funded. 4 years ago, we had our entire priority list funded, and the Ways and Means co-chairs asked us to take a pause for one biennium and then come back the following biennium with the idea that it would take most of the colleges that time amount of time to all come up with the match and all be ready to move forward. And 4 years ago, we had our entire list funded, and so what we put forward again was a full list that included 13 projects in total. There were a few colleges who did not submit. That list was funded. 11 of the 13 were funded in the governor's budget. I'm going to include one of those that was not above that mark that I will show you. So we are hoping this session to again have almost the full list, if possible, funded.
Match.
And so our Article 11G bonds must be matched at the local level. That is in the Constitution. We are often asked, could we make a fix for that? You would have to change the Constitution. And that is where the state dollars really, really play a critical role, especially in rural areas. Being able to go to your voters and saying you have a match in hand can actually make or break a bond campaign. Going to the voters and saying we didn't get our match can absolutely, end a bond campaign before it begins, especially in rural areas. There are other ways to get local match, and that you often see that, especially in areas that have had a challenge passing bonds from certificates of participation to grant funding. I mean, there are several ways to get a local match. It just cannot be state dollars. One of the things that our organization, our presidents, I think, have been quite proud of is when we come with a priority list, our presidents all come in and advocate for the list as a whole. We don't have folks come in and say, fund my project, not this project. We come and say, our folks come in and say, fund the list. And that's sort of an organizational principle for us and the way that we build these lists. If what we have done in the past and what our, if for example, you are just below the cut line of what gets funded in the next biennium, you get moved to the top, and then we move to rank all what were the two-tier second-tier projects from before. So it's a rolling list, and again, and if you didn't make the cut one biennium, you go to the top the next biennium. There was one change in our original priority list. Umpqua Community College got moved to the top. They were the events of a couple years ago, they were facing some very, very serious challenges, and so we moved them to the top.
But that was done in consensus.
Absolutely, yeah. That was absolutely consensus. And that is basically, I mean, that is both our board and our presidents tend to, for the most part, operate on consensus on these issues and all come to agreement on it. I'd be happy to take any questions about the process. Otherwise, I will quickly—I won't belabor it too much—but quickly go through the projects that we have up for consideration.
Yeah, Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the schools that have a hard time passing their bonds, you mentioned it a little bit. So we have Mount Hood Community College in our area, which is adjacent to Clackamas Community College, and Clackamas—I mean, the community has resources. And it gives consistently, but Mount Hood always struggles, and I just wonder if there's something wrong with our expectations, because they're the ones that need it the most, yet they have the hardest time passing the bond.
Chair Reardon, Representative Bynum, I mean, I think that is an excellent point. I mean, I think Klamath Community College would say the same, mm-hmm. say about the same thing, and Mount Hood faces a particular issue in that there isn't a lot of business property to tax. It's mostly residential and apartments.
Yes.
And so you're asking usually more per person, and so that can make it very difficult. Again, I mean, it is a constitutional issue for which you would really need a constitutional answer to change.
So, Mr. Chair, so does that mean we need to invest in more business activity in area?
I think it does.
Okay.
We need to grow the economy out in there, which we are doing quite a bit of with the Troutdale Industrial Park will be coming online very soon, and a Gresham Summit. So that's supposed to be 5,000 or 6,000 jobs there in the next couple of years. So maybe that'll give it a boost. I think there's still some land that's where it used to be one of the chip companies, I think, is available now. So there's potential there. But they have some other issues, I think, in terms of pulling their community together, too. So hopefully the bond will pass this time. But, hope has sprung eternal for 40 years now. and they've never passed a bond. So I really appreciate your question.
Thank you.
And with that, I will go through quickly, kind of just give a quick summary of the projects we have. First, beginning with Umpqua Community College, their industrial technology building. This addresses a pretty serious skills gap in the community. The programs that it will focus on are auto tech, welding and fabrication technology, and there will also be a space provision for apprenticeship and journeyman training, and also possibility of expansion for manufacturing and diesel mechanics training. Next, Lynn Benton Community College. This slide is meant to show sort of what they see as the outcomes of their project. They will actually be repurposing 90,000 square feet of existing buildings, repurposing them for CTE to expand CTE programs. They think this will allow them to double the size of a lot of their CTE offerings in areas like welding, machine tool, and mechatronics. So this, again, like this is would deal with buildings they already have, repurposing them for these very job-ready areas. Next, the Chemeketa Agricultural Complex. And I think this is interesting in that I think a lot of folks often forget how that Chemeketa does, in fact, serve a lot of rural parts. A lot of their district are, in fact, rural. And this will be on their Salem campus. The complex will include classrooms, office buildings, greenhouse, learning research garden, and other agricultural-related facilities. It will be co-located with Oregon State University Extension and the Marion Polk Food Share for programming and educational collaboration. Portland Community College. Their project is for their PCC Sylvania Health Technology Building. It is the oldest building on all of their campuses. Mm-hmm. It's also one of the largest across all of the PCC campuses. The programs that it would offer, that would be housed, would be radiation technology, pre-med, anatomy, and physiology. So it's very much into the healthcare fields.
Do they have to tear down existing structure to have room for this, or?
I am not sure. I don't know. I mean, it is a remodel, but sometimes remodels are basically tear downs, as you know. Yeah. Sometimes it's cheaper to do it that way. Healthcare Village for Lane Community College. This meets specific needs for Lane's dental hygiene program, dental assistant, and dental therapy. It will house medical offices and also medical office and assistant programs. It also will bring the dental clinic back onto campus, which students are able to utilize, and then folks in training, hygienists in that training program conduct. With the supervision of dentists. Next, Southwestern Oregon Community College's Student Success Center. This is an expansion, a second floor expansion of the building you see in front of you. It would create a one-stop student services center so that students get their advising and other student services all in the same place. They think it would allow them to decrease processing time for students and improve response times for services like advising. This is really critical to the work we're doing around things like guided pathways, so that students have the kind of wraparound services they need to be on the right path and go forward. The Desjardins-Pauling Science Complex. This is a perfect example of the age of some of our buildings. This is the current building is a 35-year-old building, and with the renovation, they'll be able to serve 14,000 degree-seeking students. It will reduce the time to degree, reduce overcrowding, and expand partnership opportunities. But again, I just think it's a really good example of the age of some of the buildings that we're dealing with, and especially when you're dealing with sort of science and technology, you can imagine. And in some cases, you get down to just very basic safety, air quality, and other issues in buildings of this age. Portland Community College, it was the same issue with their building.
Quick question, Chair.
Yep.
Can you go back to the previous slide?
Yep.
So it's what you're saying is replacing the building and its tools and technology. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
I think that's a good question there, though.
Mm-hmm.
So when they do the capital construction, can they also buy the equipment? Or
yeah, it has to be
another fund.
It has to be able to last over a certain amount of time, and I can't remember what the time is, but it has to have a certain lifetime to be eligible for Article 11G bonding.
Okay. Yeah, another question. Yeah, one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you mind flipping back? So that one, it looks like the legislative match was one-fourth, one-third. I don't know. It's late. And can you flip back to the previous one? Oh, you didn't put the other amounts and how much people are spending. But I just think that it's – the point I wanted to make was they were able to raise – looks like one-fourth. One-fourth of the cost, the three-fourths of the cost with one-fourth legislative match.
Chair and Representative Bynum, you will often see that where if a college is going out for a bond, that they anticipate the bond to cover more than the $8 million, which is the cap for each of our colleges as they go through the process. Each college is capped at $8 million. So you can, of course, match. I mean, you just have to match at least what you get. You some of the campuses that are able will go above and beyond.
My point is that the system that we have is enabling those of us who have to continue to get farther and farther and farther ahead. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Mount Hood, to get $25 million.
Yeah, we're trying to pass a $75 million bond, which is cut down from, what was 125 before that, something. That's a really great observation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, correct me if I'm wrong, but usually the bond, the pledge from the state comes first. The fundraising comes after.
Generally.
Once we give the commitment to the institution, then they can take that to go out and leverage, right? So they don't have a pile of pledge money sitting here conditional upon state support. So at least that's the way I've seen it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rep. Reschke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does the local match have to be a bond, or can it be, could you find federal dollars, or can you find, basically, if you can raise the money, you can use the match?
Representative Reardon, or Chair Reardon, Representative Reschke, it simply can't be state dollars.
Okay.
It could be private, it could come from a private donor, it could come from a grant, it could come from a certificate of participation. I mean, there are other ways you can do it. It just simply can't be state dollars.
Okay.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I think also, how long can you stay if you don't get the match? Is you can be jumped over or you can go off the list. Is that correct?
Chair Reardon, Representative Wisner, I believe it's 6 years, and if you haven't within 6 years, they do. Yet you don't get to expend the match if you don't, and that occasionally happens where a college can't make their match, and then the money goes back. I have heard the co-chairs, at least one of the co-chairs, say before that gives them a little bit of extra room because they know that some of the money might not get expended, so it gives them sort of some wiggle room.
Great questions. Thank you.
All right. So Mount Hood Community College, and this actually does this is an expansion to the west side portion of their campus, which runs from Southeast 162nd out to I-205. This area serves more people in poverty than any area in Oregon. And so this is just an attempt to really increase educational services in that area to provide instruction-based student services and expand programs. But I think this really does get at what, in part, Representative Bynum, you were talking about, this district has had a real challenge. They have not been able to pass a bond. They have a challenge with the property that they're actually trying to tax, and they have the highest concentrations of poverty in the state.
What are we looking at here, John? Is this the dream of the future, or is this what's existing?
This is what is existing, and they're planning to expand.
Okay.
This is
Rep Johnson's house.
They have really nice pictures. Mount Hood can't even afford to get a drawing of what they want. So.
You know they haven't passed a bond, so yes. They're very slim budget. We all are on a slim budget.
It doesn't look very modern.
Blue Mountain, this is a really interesting project to me. Their Farm 2 project, it's a collaboration with the city of Pendleton and the Pendleton Roundup. It provides hands-on learning environment for Blue Mountain's nationally recognized agriculture, animal science, and livestock programs. It will be co-located on Roundup property, and it will also house their national champion rodeo team. Obviously, for that part of the state, agricultural and animal science programs are really important for workforce, and so that is their project.
So, will they own the property though that it's built on?
Yeah. Well, they will own the building. I don't know honestly if they're leasing or purchasing the property. I have to get back to you on that. It's on property that I know is currently owned by the Roundup, and that's a good question. I'm not sure if it's a lease of property or a purchase of property. Oh, I did try to skip one. The Oregon Coast Community College Workforce Education Resiliency Center. This will be housed in Lincoln City, which Lincoln City is. The diversity of the population is really increasing, and the area is really facing a lot of intergenerational poverty with lower academic achievement comparatively. Potential programs would include emergency preparedness and management, maritime technicians, applied technology, and teacher preparation. Rogue Community College Science and Nursing Buildings. This is another great example of the age of some of our buildings and the struggle, the challenge with keeping sort of relevant, up-to-date facilities. For the science building, it is a 40-year-old building with the renovation will support RN, nursing, allied health, and STEM, and then their actual nursing building, which they hope to renovate, is 50 years old. And that is actually, I have one more project I will show you. This is the last project that was in the governor's budget. This project was not actually on the governor's list, but I just wanted to make you aware of it. It's the Clatsop Community College Marine Environmental Research and Training Station, expansion. It will serve the maritime industry, which currently has an acute need for educated workforce. These are jobs that are in the $40,000 to $50,000 a year range, this is another pretty economically depressed area for a whole lot of Oregonians. They are continuing to advocate and hope to get funded for this project. But again, it was not in the governor's budget. I think the governor's office hoped to get the whole way through the list, but
this is the first one under the cut line.
First one under the cut line. That's right.
And how much was it? They'd get the $8 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there was a Treasure Valley project. They currently have a holdover project, which means they would not be eligible for a further one. They are waiting on a grant to find out if they will have it grant funded. That I think they will find out this week. But they currently would not have a project in the mix because if you have a carryover, you're not really eligible to move forward with another project. And they currently have a carryover project.
Okay. Yeah, real quick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, back to the class of the new manufacturing facility we're putting in there or helping fund. Is the university, community college not looking at maybe co-locating or using some of that facility? Are you familiar what I'm talking about?
Representative Reardon, or Chair Reardon, Representative Wisner, I am not sure the relation between this project and that, and if there is one. I don't really have a particularly good answer. I have to get back to you on that. Are we talking about the Boeing?
Yeah.
OMIC.
Yeah. OMIC. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I was wondering, too, is how that is there fit on this list, any relationship?
I'm not sure there is. I think this is specifically maritime, and my understanding is the OMIC project is more it's high tech manufacturing and I would assume being Boeing related to the aviation industry more than the maritime industry.
But it's not on any of this list, so you don't care.
That was separate. Collaborative project, which we get some of our colleges are asked to participate or included in collaborative projects that are not part of the list, that are driven by a city or driven by a regional partnership, and they're asked to participate. And that was really what happened with OMIC. It was not part of our list, but a great opportunity for the state.
Rep. Johnson.
John, I'm not seeing the OCCA credit and degree transfer workshop on the list here, where you can host your other higher ed partners and do that hard work on House Bill 2998.
Well,
that'd be a fine
addition. Representative Johnson, thank you for the question. We do in fact have now, and we will hopefully be doing an informational presentation on our Student Success Center, which will hopefully be a real part of that. I do tell people though that when we started a Student Success Center, it was not a building; it is just an office in our office. We did not build an actual building with it. For it.
Thank you
for the question.
Good plug there. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. This has really been interesting to see this update, and good luck with all the projects.
Great. Thank you very much.
Lisa. Yeah. So are
you working with the county? Okay. If we could ask Mike Green and Dan Zelko to join us.
Thank you
so much for being here.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Green. I'm the Vice President for Finance and Administration and Chief Financial Officer for Oregon State University. And thank you very much for providing us time today to walk through the public university capital construction requests. For generations now, Oregon's seven public universities have provided a gateway to the American dream for students and their families. The universities have served as spaces for opportunity, research, and learning. Our success has relied upon the buildings and infrastructure that enable students to learn, our faculty to teach, and our communities to gather. We are stewards for approximately half of Oregon's state-owned capital assets, and we do not take lightly our responsibility to preserve and enhance these facilities, many of which are aging and in need of updates to address accessibility, emergency efficiency, and safety, especially Oregon's seismic future. Campuses are both catching up and keeping up as they work to attract the best students. With tuition revenue, endowments, and capital funding constrained, the age profile of many campuses continues to rise, as does the risk of deferred maintenance. Today, we'll present our collective capital project requests for the 17-19 biennium that have been proposed by the public university presidents and have been evaluated by the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. In addition to hearing from me, you'll also hear from one other representative from public universities, Dan Zelko, the Associate Vice President for Planning, Construction, and Real Estate at Portland State University. We will be collectively presenting on all university capital project requests for the upcoming biennium, and we'll do our best to answer your questions. If you have specific questions on an institution's project that isn't represented on this panel, we'll be happy to follow up after the hearing. A great deal of the data provided in this presentation was collected by Sidelines, a third-party higher education facility asset management firm who the public universities jointly contracted with in 2016 to study past capital investments and returns, current needs, as well as projected future demand for infrastructure on our campuses. They also worked to benchmark Oregon's progress and status with peer university systems and institutions nationwide. With the help of Sightlines, we were able to assess historical investments in university capital, including new projects, major renovations that address capital improvement and renewal, and emergency projects. Before we dig into each institution's individual project requests for this biennium, we want to provide a high-level overview of the last decade of investment and what the state has seen in return for that debt service commitment. Overall, the capital investment activity provides significant benefits to the state. It expands opportunity for Oregon students, leverages private investment, creates family wage jobs across Oregon, facilitates faculty research, provide new spaces that are designed to meet the changing pedagogical needs of students in the 21st century, and produces energy savings by adding more LEED-certified buildings. Over the last 10 years, there's been $1.13 billion invested by the state of Oregon in university capital construction, $600 million leveraged in matching funds from private philanthropy and university funds, almost 14,000 jobs created by campus construction across Oregon, 1.2 million gross square feet of LEED-certified space added, leading to energy cost savings and sustainability, $680 million invested by Oregon universities into renovating existing spaces to decrease the demand, or excuse me, the deferred maintenance backlog, and $600 million into new spaces for students and faculty. But we still have a long way to go. Despite these investments, growing enrollments across all public universities mean there is less space per student in 2015 than there was in 2007. Compared to our peers, we have 52% less space per student. Buildings in Oregon universities are older compared to peers. More than 70% of the spaces at universities are more than 25 years old. This contributes to the deferred maintenance backlog and puts pressure on affordability. Sustained reinvestment is a priority to address accumulated facility needs. Over the next 10 years, we must invest at least $950 million into existing ENG spaces alone to address the deferred maintenance backlog and the additional deferred maintenance that will accrue during those years.
Could we go ahead and interrupt for
yes,
a question?
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Vice President Green, I want to ask you a question about, because the slide that shows the 60% of the space is 20, the slides aren't. There we go. Yes, sir. Can you tell us what percent of the space is that's over 25 years old is dormitory?
None of it. This is all education in general space.
There's no dormitory.
That's correct.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, Chair.
That's
fine. Are there questions?
Okay, this slide specifically shows this, what I was just talking about, the age of the campus facilities.
He wasn't doing the slides.
When campus facilities are over 25 years old is really the time in the building's life cycle when key building components like roofs, windows, doors, HVAC, electrical, and plumbing systems begin to come due for replacement. Campuses have managed aging infrastructure, but our campus facilities are older than their peer systems, as you can see. Sightlines also looked at campus age projections over out 10 years. They estimated that, assuming there are no changes to current inventory, more than 50% of space on Oregon's public university campuses will be 25 years or older by 2026.
Can we, the same money that's used for capital construction, can that be used for maintenance?
We have in the request money for what's capital improvement and repairs, and that money is set aside for specifically for that backlog. Many of these projects that we get funded, if they're renovations, will address some of the deferred maintenance backlog. And if it's used on things like HVAC, you know, long-lived improvements to the buildings, the bonds can be used for that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. This slide depicts the 10-year deferred maintenance need of Oregon's public universities. Deferred maintenance, also known as capital investment and renewal, includes things like roofing and building exteriors, HVAC equipment and distribution systems, lighting and electrical wiring and equipment, plumbing, rough-in and fixtures, interior finishes, and painting in public areas. This data came from the Sightline study of Oregon public universities done in 2016. And this is reflecting the need relative to ENG space only. We believe it is underestimating that need. Oregon campuses are below average in space per student than our peers. The growth in ENG space is not keeping pace with enrollment. There's less space per student on Oregon Public University campuses in 2015 than in 2007. Despite the fact that the state's debt service for universities had increased in the past 15 years, we're still lagging in space per student.
Could you elaborate on the space per student thing? Mm-hmm. I walk on campuses, it looks pretty roomy to me, so what are we talking about there?
Well, it's simply, and Dan may be able to answer it more precisely than I am, but it's simply a measure of square footage of ENG space per student FTE.
Classroom space or?
What's ENG?
All ENG space.
So yeah, so it's classrooms, academic offices, administrative offices, and we're just a little denser than the average among our peers.
Yeah. Challenging your information. I'm just trying to understand.
I was embarrassed to ask what ENG, but so you defined that. Education general space. And Vice President Green, does that include student centers?
It could, depending on the funding source. Dan, you might want to elaborate if you have more.
Vice Chair,
Have you identified yourself yet?
Yes. Hi. Sorry, my name's Dan Zalko. I'm the Associate Vice President for Planning, Construction, and Real Estate at Portland State University.
Right. Thank you.
Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Wisnett. In the student centers, primarily they are not education general space like a student union. We do have student centers and spaces throughout campus that do use education general space, but the majority of it is self-support auxiliary space.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Alonzo de Leon, and Vice Chair Wisnett, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. The next couple slides, we'll talk about our internal processes that go into our requests, and then we'll move on to the projects themselves. So each university has their own set of plans that they look to. They include physical master plans, climate action plans, research plans, academic school-specific plans, strategic plans, all of which inform how we prioritize our needs. We also take into account the changing environment, changing pedagogy. For example, we recently had a mathematics class that was teaching in a 300-seat lecture hall, switched to 10 30-seat classrooms in more of a flipped academic style. Research is constantly changing, so we always have to take that into account as well. And then local and state requirements, such as 1% that has to be spent on art, the restrictions that among the bond funds, and then our own local rules, mostly planning, zoning, land use, permitting, that each of us have as well. And then our own initiatives, and the ones on the screen, sustainability, retention, accessibility, equity, and diversity, are some examples that are some of the common ones that have been emphasized in recent years. Give you an example at Portland State how we prioritize our projects. For us, it's a two-year process. We start with our campus planning office doing an analysis. There's an example on the screen where we've got over 30 project ideas, and we use a matrix that looks at things such as will research space be created, will it promote student success, address programmatic needs, how they affect recruitment retention, do they address deferred maintenance. So we use this matrix, meet with about 30 individuals, vice presidents, deans, administrative unit heads. We also consider other funding opportunities. Is there a particular donor that might be able to contribute to a project, federal and state grants? Partnership opportunities. This is used at a number of universities, whether it's private at PSU, it might be someone like Nike or Intel. Local agency bureaus as well. And then we have a capital advisory committee. It's a 12-member committee consisting of our vice presidents, representative from the faculty senate, representative from student government, representative from the dean's council. They meet monthly. We bring a project list to them. They, over the course of a few months, prioritize the projects and make a recommendation to the president and ultimately to the board of trustees, and that leads to our request to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission.
If we have a question, Rep. Lonzo Leon.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, you kind of answered it, because you said you have the student president or somebody representing. So through this whole process, you only have one student participate in this process, or do you have the opportunity to have multiple students participate in this process?
Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Alonzo Leon, we have a number of students. On this committee, we have one. We ask the student government president if he or she would like to be on it or to designate someone. The Capital Advisor Committee also has a number of subcommittees, one of which is a student space committee that has a number of students on it, I think 5 out of the 10, approximately, of the members. They look at spaces throughout campus and help allocate a small fund that we have for student spaces, student lounges, study lounges. But they also provide these subcommittees also provide feedback on the list as well. So those are the two areas where we receive most of our student feedback.
Thank you.
Okay. Vice Chair Whitten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice President Zockel. Is that correct? That close?
Correct. Although Associate Vice President.
Okay. Thank you. I sit on the Ways and Means Education Committee, so we've talked a little bit about this, and I read the literature that says colleges are really competing with each other for students and sort of creating, you know, niceties for the students. Can you comment on the criteria or the prioritization for recruitment and retention? Can you expand on that, please?
Yes, certainly, Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Wisnett. There's very many opinions on whether something's going to help with recruitment and retention. Is it the appearance of the building? Is it an innovative new academic program that's being proposed? cost as well. At PSU, it even includes our commercial retail environment. We recently brought a small grocery store called Green Zebra to campus. And we talked about how it will help with recruitment because the student tours, family tours, walk by it. It's a very nice little store. So there's a lot of different opinions, and the committee looks at all of them with each project and has a discussion and ultimately has a subjective ranking on how much an individual project will help in that area.
Thank you.
Kind of paused here. As you're looking at your projects, are you aware of, I guess, sort of the programs that are being taught at other communities so that to avoid duplication and redundancy of the programs that you're trying to build for?
Yeah, Chair Reardon, that is definitely taken into account, and both with the other four-year universities and the community colleges. We do have overlap, of course, and we do have really good relationships with a number of them and try to work on ways to not compete. For example, at the Portland State project that I'll be sharing with you, Portland Community College will be co-locating with us with their dental programs. So it's an area where there is not competition, and we are trying to make sure we're not replicating offerings. Mm-hmm. So we both take into account on a local level and across, but there are times where we do decide that having similar programs makes sense. But
this may be way beyond the scope of this presentation. If it is, just tell me and we're fine. But I'm thinking of like OHSU, PSU, and PCC all have some aspect of the health curriculum and health courses program. So is that planning done in some cooperative nature, or how does that happen?
Yes, Chair Reardon. With OHSU, we have a lot of collaboration. 3 years ago, we opened the Collaborative Life Science Building, not just with them, but also with Oregon State. Oregon State School of Pharmacy's there. PSU's Chemistry and Biology undergrad programs are there. And OHSU's Medical School and Dental School and Nursing programs have offerings there. And we looked at that project as an opportunity for students to see what they could be as a profession, where they could grow and hopefully move into the other programs. The project that I'll be sharing also has OHSU as a partner. PSU and OHSU a year or two ago joined to create a joint school of public health, where our undergrad school of community health merged with their master's in public health. And we saw that as a really synergistic way. So for us, it's really that partnership is really important, and we do our best to try to work together collaboratively.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, so I'll turn it over to Mike for the...
Thank you. Now, to take a look at how we kind of come up with our listing of projects or our proposed projects for funding. Beginning in March of 2016, leaders from each public university met to begin the process of putting forward a prioritized project list and come to agreement on the list that all the universities would collectively support for the 2017-19 biennium. The list you'll see over the next two slides represents the result of that work. These projects were submitted to the HEC, which then evaluated and ranked each one based on its rubric. To be clear, the president chose to not rank the list, but prioritize them into Tier 1 and Tier 2 buckets. Their Tier 1 prioritized projects totaled $284.4 million. This is an incredibly difficult process for the universities, and we are proud of our work together to come to this. Some campuses have put forward projects that require only campus-paid debt. Article 11F bonds.
A question here.
Yes.
Yeah, Vice Chair Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Vice President Green, I'm obviously interested in OSU Cascade. I totaled this up. It was $84.5 million. Is that all that we've asked for to build out to the 5,000, or are there other elements that are not in this plan of the OSU Cascade campus that were not presented?
Thank you. Yes, the amounts on this list, let me go back to
thank you.
See this here. The amounts on the prioritized Tier 1 list only included $9 million of the Cascades ask. You know, as I'm telling you, but as you recall, that in House Bill 2782 that you passed out of this committee onto House to Ways and Means, included the additional funding necessary to build out the campus in the second phase of the build out to get us to reach that 5,000 student capacity. And of course, what we want to emphasize here today is that this prioritized list of the $284.4 million, the president's prioritized list, really is kind of what we will want to have considered first and evaluated first before that additional ask was considered.
Clarification, Ms. Kutcher. Thank you, Ms. Kutcher. Thank you. So the Tier 1 priority right now for OSU Cascade is the $9 million for the expansion, the ground, and all that. And then
yes.
I totaled it up to be $84.5 million. I forgot what the bill we passed was, the total for that was.
I thought it was 20.
I think it was,
40?
69 million.
Yeah, 69. Yeah.
Of state-paid bonds.
Okay. So... So we're not, you're planning, or the president's, or my follow-up, I'm sorry.
Okay.
So this will come later, not in the next, in this budget or this next 2 years? Is that what we're saying?
Well, what we're saying is that the universities together agree that this Tier 1 list that included $9 million of Cascades, and that's important that list and that funding and that amount, that $284 million, be considered first before the additional funding for Cascades is considered that was in 2782. It's just a respect of the process.
Last clarification real quick. So is the 284.4, is that the maximum bonding authority we have, and that's why it's Tier 1? Is that why do we, where did we come up with the 284.4?
That was an estimate of kind of what we thought would be a capacity, but that's not any kind of legislative capacity or any state bond capacity. That's just...
Thank you for your answers.
Thank you.
In your criteria, is there a view of a kind of a geographical equity, in other words, or distribution of universities across the state relative to the population of the state?
I think what there's a view of is that, you know, each of these campuses, I hope I'm answering your question, Chair Reardon, each of these campuses, you know, evaluate their strategic plan and their mission and how they need to what investments they need to make to reach those strategic goals, and their boards approve these asks to the legislature, and so we look at this as a group of universities and respect that request from those individual boards and individual prioritizations for those regions.
I'm trying to put this delicately, and I'm not very delicate all the time, so please don't take offense. We may have growth in one part of the state, and maybe it needs a bigger investment than another part of the state that has, you know, say, five universities on one side of the mountain and two on the other. Does that problem or potential opportunity addressed in this process? Or is that something we need to be more actively involved in, not to put you on the spot?
Chair Reardon, I think that that is somewhat considered, but I think, you know, in your position, you have a different position and different responsibility.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Rep. Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Earlier in your presentation, you talked about the number of square feet that where the facilities have LEED certification. How is that decision made? Is it made at the campus level? Each campus would be able to submit a project and just designate it be either LEED, Platinum, Gold, or whatever. Is it left up to the university, or is there some sort of overarching guidance, I guess, that the universities have to try to stay within a square foot cost allotment as they put their proposed package proposals together?
Chair Reardon, Representative Johnson, I might defer to Associate Vice President Zalko to answer that question. I think he's closer to that process.
Sure. Representative Johnson, the universities all have their own criteria.
Mm-hmm.
At one point with the Oregon University System, they did require us to have a minimum LEED Silver. We aren't under that requirement now. At PSU, we have an internal PSU Gold minimum. And most of the universities are using the LEED certification now. We often do question whether we should continue and whether it's worth the money. And I know some universities with the smaller projects, it actually is determined it's not. With a larger project, it ends up being a really small part of the budget, but it's not so much the case with the smaller ones.
Good question.
Follow up.
Yeah, I ask because, as you well know, I guess the question is, are the projects being built comparable to a LEED Platinum or Silver or Gold, or do they actually have to be certified by LEED? Because those are two different questions. You can get there without going through the third-party certification process, but just utilize a lot of the same, you know, insulation, energy efficiency concepts. I mean, LEED gets you a sticker on the wall at the end of the process. That's what you get. And, you know, brownie points for doing it, but it doesn't make your building function any better necessarily. So that's where I come from.
Yeah. Well, Chair Reardon and Representative Johnson, there's obviously a big discussion in the construction and project management community on the value of LEED. And a lot of institutions and agencies are choosing to meet a lot of the aspects of LEED without going with LEED. We continue to seek it at our university. At this time, but that certainly may change because there's a big debate about it. We often find that it really pushes our team to work really hard, and we're currently pursuing LEED for existing buildings, operations and maintenance for a few buildings, really to push down our energy use in buildings and having kind of a stick to help us really address the kind of high energy use and actually decrease operational costs. So sometimes we find it used to really help us manage ourselves in making sure we're operating them efficiently.
I guess just a follow-up, and I guess for our other colleague that serves on Ways and Means too, you don't serve on CAP construction, but I do think it would be interesting to get a cost per square foot comparison on projects that are submitted, because there can be wide variances. And again, if we're trying to get the most bang for the buck and the most beneficial space for students, I think that all ought to be a part of the conversation.
Interesting observation, I think, but I would just throw in that they're very different projects too, so it's not like the building.
I agree. No, yeah. You're absolutely right.
So, okay.
Thank you. Really quickly, as I was mentioning on this list, this is a list of capital projects that's put forth for funding of state bonds, Article 11F bonds, that are not, the debt service is not paid for by the state. These projects, the debt service would be paid for by the university from revenues of the project. So after the HEC submitted its agency request budget, the governor issued her recommended 2017-19 budget, which included funding for capital projects. There were several projects supported by the president and that you'll hear about today that were not funded in her budget. They were Western Oregon University's Information Technology Center Phase 3 renovation, Eastern Oregon University's Loso Hall renovation, Phase 1, OSU's Fairbanks Hall renovation, Eastern Oregon University's Athletics, Physical Activity, and Health Field House, and three OSU Cascades expansion projects. Critical capital improvement and renewal funds for all universities dropped by $19.4 million in the governor's budget. PSU's Graduate School of Education building dropped by $4.5 million, and that was moved from Q bonds to G bonds, requiring a corresponding increase in the campus match. Oregon Tech Center for Excellence in Engineering and Technology building dropped by $2 million, and $4 million was moved from Q bonds to G bonds, requiring a corresponding increase in their match. UO's classroom and faculty office building dropped by $11 million, and UO's Nike campus project was dropped by $66 million. In addition to the defunding of certain projects, the governor's recommended budget also shifted the allocation of the types of bonds for certain projects. While this may seem inconsequential, different types of debt instruments have different requirements. Some require university match funds and others don't. Thus, a shift in the type of bond could have a real and lasting effect on the institution's ability to carry out its project. We would advocate that in what goes forward, we would shift the funding back to what the president's recommended, the bond type, what was recommended, which would not have an impact on the state debt service that would be required to service those bonds, but would help these projects go forward under their original funding rubric.
So although not a specific project, this what you see here was ranked number one by the presidents and by the Higher Education Coordinating Commission because of how important it is. We receive money to address deferred maintenance from the state. Last biennium, we received collectively $65 million. It is split among the seven universities based on square footage. We requested the same amount this time. This one is one of the ones that Mike just mentioned was reduced in the governor's recommended budget down to about $46 million. So this is one that is really important for us that that number gets brought back, that we don't start to decrease the amount of deferred maintenance we are able to address. This goes to everything from roof replacements to HVAC system replacements, our plumbing replacements. Our buildings, the largest number of our buildings were built between 1955 and 1975, and we still have a lot of supply that needs significant amount of work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Associate Vice President, how are we doing as far as Americans with Disability Act improvements? Are we have any federal? City of Bend was being, a lot of pressure by the federal government. They were not in compliance. Are we making improvements as we can and things? Or is there any pressure from the feds that we're not adequately or quickly responding to the ADA requirements?
Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Wisnett, I am not aware of any pressure from a federal agency at any of the universities. When the legislature approved the funds last time, there was a strong request that some of it go to accessibility improvements. And I know that there is work at all seven universities to use the funds from the state to make improvements. And I don't know of any pressure that's been placed.
Good,
federally. So now we move to the individual projects. This education and health building, this is a, we think, going to be a nine-story building at this time. It could be as low as seven, about 200,000 square feet. It's currently a surface parking lot. This is a collaboration between the city, who will put one of their bureaus. They have not determined which bureau it would be yet. They will have about 30,000 square feet. Portland Community College will be relocating their dental programs from their Sylvania campus. It's dental hygiene, dental lab tech, dental assistant, to this building, about 30,000 square feet. They also have a community clinic for low-income residents, and they're looking to increase the size of that clinic by moving it to the central city. OHSU, PSU's Joint School of Public Health, which is now dispersed, will consolidate in this building, and the Graduate School of Education, which is currently spread among three buildings at PSU, all older buildings, will also consolidate into this building. This was one of the buildings that received a small haircut in the governor's budget that we would like brought up back to our request. Because we cannot fully accommodate the two schools with the decrease that was in the recommended budget.
Okay, the OSU Gilkey Hall renovation project. This is a $5 million project. This turns a 1912 dairy science building into an academic success center. Project will update accessibility, fire and life safety, plumbing, electrical, mechanical systems, addressing critical deferred maintenance needs. Also allow the co-location of support units, advising, the writing center, tutoring, and experiential learning, which is important for low-income and first-generation college students. Co-locating these units will help track services using predictive analytics for timely intervention. The OSU Oregon Quality Foods and Beverage Center project. This project will create three research and learning pilot facilities for brewing science, wine science, and dairy science.
You just got Rep. Johnson's attention. So.
Dairy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Apologize for laughing. The focus of the centers includes soil and water conservation, superior crop varieties, innovative food processing, nutrition, and economics. These emphases will help build an Oregon quality identity for the sustainably produced superior quality foods and beverages of our state, benefiting not only the students, teachers, and researchers who use the facility, but also the growers, processors, distributors, marketers, and consumers of this in this $22 billion segment of Oregon's economy. Next project is OSU Cordley Hall renovation phase one. Cordley Hall is a 236,000 square foot research building that is home to biology, horticultural, botany, plant pathology, and zoology research and teaching. To give perspectives to the importance of this facility, over 25% of the total research grant award dollars received by OSU in 2015 was awarded to units located in Cordley Hall. So this is very important. This project includes replacing mechanical and electrical systems focused on improving energy efficiency and safety, upgrading the fire and life safety systems, and improving accessibility. These improvements will improve student experiences in core courses.
All right, at Eastern, this is a small project, a $1.2 million, but extremely important to the university. It's to provide a secure, safe place for their data center, data storage, telecommunications. So although small in dollar amount, it is really important for them to have this new facility. At Oregon Tech, this is phase two of a project where it's a center for excellence in engineering and technology and a renovation of Cornett Hall. It'll allow them to accommodate an additional 500 students and be a high-tech building that provides space for entrepreneurship, interdisciplinary work, and applied research with companies. Just back to the Oregon Tech one. This one also in the governor's recommended budget. Had a $2 million decrease, and we would like their funding back to the request as well. University of Oregon, another one where the funds are lower in the recommended budget. This one is a classroom and faculty office building. This will add 1,700 state-of-the-art classroom seats, as well as 90 new offices for faculty members. At Southern Oregon University, a small yet important project to modernize Central Hall, which was built in 1949. This is primarily a deferred maintenance project that's going to address their major building systems, HVAC, electrical alarms, and it'll be upgraded to meet current ADA requirements. At Western Oregon University, they're looking for funds to renovate a building that they have acquired through the state-authorized bonds and other funding. It was the Oregon Military Academy. The building will come back to WOU, and WOU will renovate it to create an entrance point for campus. A number of student services they're considering putting in here, such as admissions, financial aid, service learning, career development, and veterans affairs. Another Western Oregon University project, and this is a $6 million project. It's phase three for them, with a building that houses computer science, information systems, and visual communications. And this is the final phase to bring this building to a state-of-the-art building. At Eastern, phase one of a renovation of Loso Hall. This is primarily theaters, art gallery, recital rooms. They have a lot of events where they invite the local community as well. This building is from the late 80s and has a number of renovation needs that will be addressed with this $5.5 million.
OSU Fairbanks Hall renovation project. $11 million project to renovate OSU's second oldest building, which and is home to the College of Liberal Arts, excuse me, which is OSU's highest generator of credit hours. This project will improve teaching and learning spaces, support faculty recruitment and retention, become fully accessible, create critically needed space in the unused fourth floor, and reduce building energy costs, improve fire and life safety, including seismic. This is the Eastern Oregon University Fieldhouse project. One of the things you'll notice, it's up there. It's been corrected. Never mind. Excuse me. We had an error in an earlier slide, so I was going to point that out. Thank you. The construction of Eastern Oregon University's athletics, physical activity, and health fieldhouse will provide a venue unique to Eastern Oregon, unique to the Eastern region of Oregon. There is no other venue of this kind within more than 300 miles of the university. The Fieldhouse will support intercollegiate, regional, and statewide athletic events, as well as conferences, concerts, and trade shows. The completed project will benefit local and regional businesses with the services provided within the facility and benefit the university with an otherwise unrealized revenue stream.
So they're not replacing an existing facility. This would like be a whole new thing.
This would be a new facility.
Totally,
yes.
Revolutionize that area.
Yep.
Okay.
OSU Cascades Campus Expansion Site Reclamation and Preparation Project is a $9 million project we discussed briefly before. The expansion for OSU Cascades beyond its current capacity is crucial to meeting the needs of Oregon's fastest growing region, yet one that lags behind the rest of Oregon in higher educational attainment. The reclamation of the site, which includes partial fill and compaction of the pumice mine, will be undertaken according to the campus design specifications outlined in OSU Cascades long-range development plan and to ready the site for building development. This is the essential first step in readying already purchased land for further building development.
Could I ask a question? Maybe everybody else knows this, but wouldn't most of our schools serve Pell-eligible rural and first-generation students? For maybe PSU.
Actually, I think all of our students do serve some Pell-eligible students, yes.
Okay. Nothing special about we know it's special.
It's special in that there's a region of the state that is definitely not served as well as other regions of the state.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
I have a quick question,
Please.
Here I notice it says reclaim 46 acres of pumice mine. Does that mean that the institution always owned it? Or can you explain?
Certainly. Chair Reed, Vice Chair Alonzo Leon. It's really reclaiming a mine. It's right now it's licensed as a mine. It's a pumice mine, and we're reclaiming it for other uses
other
besides
purposes.
The mine.
Got it.
Thank you. The OSU Cascades Campus Graduate Research Center project is a $490,000 project, rather small, but it's really important to the university. As Cascades increases its offerings of academic degree programs and courses, it'll be necessary to accommodate the related increase in faculty and staff. Following the acquisition of this building in 2012, approximately 60% was renovated to provide academic classrooms and office space. The proposed renovation project will increase the utilization and efficiency of select areas in the Graduate Research Center. Includes our presentation.
Rep. John.
Thank you. Was that last building at OSU Cascades the one that's going to be called Wisnet Hall?
Wisnet Hall? That's.
I thought I read that somewhere.
I have. Maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
That was because
he's
of the $2 million.
He's popular down there. I read about him in the paper.
That was because of the $2 million contribution he's going to make, right?
It sets right on the river.
Sure. In your office will be.
Okay. Any other things, questions? Do we have sort of, you know, if you look across all the institutions, and you said that you have universities own half the assets of the state. Did I hear that?
That is correct, Representative Reardon.
Do we know the seismic condition of all of those in terms of seismic safety? Has there been any inventory done of all the facilities so we know how woefully far behind we are?
Chair Reardon, I believe there has been, and perhaps Associate Vice President Zalko could expound on some details about that.
Chair Reardon, the last time there was one done collectively was by the Oregon University system, maybe about 5 years ago. And then each university has their own system for tracking, and I'm not aware what all the universities are doing now. I know at PSU we have a table with every building describing what code the building meets, whether there was renovations done, what the renovations were. And so we track them. We also keep structural improvements in our capital improvement database, and those get prioritized with other improvements when we allocate our capital improvement funds. And then we always, of course, with the major renovations, try to do as much as we can.
Would there be any value, and I think there might be, in elevating that and having a more comprehensive list, because we're already really concerned about bridges, freeways, everything else. Maybe this would give us another thing to worry about, but in terms of the seismic and trying to manage, looking ahead, how do we upgrade these, and would that help with prioritization at all, or maybe you're already prioritizing things in an excellent manner, but kind of wondering your thoughts on that.
Chair Reardon, it's challenging because we all have a lot of improvements that could be done, and they vary greatly. And even the seismic studies we do on individual buildings aren't always very clear. They often provide a lot of recommendations for options to get it closer to code, or to just we have a lot of pressure ourselves from our own faculty and students to make structural improvements. And I think one thing that we could consider, since we already collectively use sight lines to look at deferred maintenance, is it might make sense to do something together rather than each of us. That we might get more efficiency by actually having an analysis where we go in together. I know we do some of our own, but there may be a way collectively where we could help rise the attention.
They're not asking you to do anything right now.
Yeah.
Just kind of
but it's a good idea to maybe get rise the attention of it.
Yeah. Vice Chair Wisher?
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Coach. Before you gentlemen leave, thank you for your presentation and everything you talked about. There's only one resident hall being built, and that's being using your own money to build that. So are the resident halls good? Do you need more? I've commented in this committee before that I see more and more university areas, communities, private dormitories growing and offering a lot of more amenities. Can you comment on that, please?
Certainly, Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Wisnet. You might not see some projects that are funded by university revenue bonds. So those would be bonds that the university issues themselves for those kind of projects. And so that might be part of why you're not seeing some of that being done. And each university has to consider the occupancy projections and understand whether or not a project can be supported with those revenues, because we don't want to build a residence hall that then ends up impacting the tuition of all students. And so it's really a exercise in demand management, understanding of forecasting of enrollments, understanding the changes in the demographics of students, of the preferences of students, and what the marketability reliability of our facilities are. So it's just many facets that go into deciding how to when to renovate, when to renovate, when to build, how to meet the demand. And then, of course, there are some private interests that are building around our campuses to support some student needs. So.
Thank you.
Something I've always been curious about, and that's projections and student capacity or student population on the campus and their square footage one should have to accommodate that population. I'm sure all institutions have their own formula around that in deciding whether they need to expand in any particular way. Does that make sense? Does that question make sense to you guys?
Rep Alonzo Leon. Yes, that question makes sense. And certainly we do evaluate. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into that. It's, you know, the program that we're going to be mounting and the demand for programs will certainly impact what space that we need for students. The enrollment projections will impact that space we need for students. Pedagogical changes that will impact that space. And I'm probably missing three or four of them. But there's a number of factors that go into understanding the space needs for today, for next biennium, for 10 years from now. And so we continually evaluate, and that's a process that I think PSU incorporates in their understanding of what their capital needs are. We certainly do as we think about our longer-range capital plans.
And I'll add Chair Reardon and Vice Chair Alonzo Leon. Also, part of our job on the administrative side is to put parameters around the demands and needs of faculty and students. Everyone wants more space, but we know the cost to operate that space, whether it's maintenance, security, et cetera. And so there's a lot of kind of pushback that we have to do with the requests and for more space. Because, we certainly, building it doesn't help cover the ongoing costs and that are funded by the university mostly through tuition.
Follow-up, Chair.
Yeah, please.
And I would assume that there's some sort of, thinking around when you're recruiting students, because every single institution is fighting for those students, right? And I kind of, in my mind, think about would there ever be a capacity issue in Oregon where all of our schools are up to the brim with students? And what if there's an overflow? What do we do?
Well, Chair Reardon and Vice Chair Alonzo Leon, we hope to have that problem soon. We did when we were growing very fast from 2000 to 2007. It was a struggle for a lot of the universities to keep up. For PSU, without a lot of land, we found ourselves acquiring buildings with our own money because we didn't have the time to come to the legislature for funding, and so a building came for sale. We put on a lot of debt on our books during that time. Over the last few years, it hasn't been a challenge, but hopefully, in the years to come, we will again have an issue where we'll have an extreme space crunch again and have that challenge.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. This has been a great afternoon, learning about the process, the thoughtfulness, the collaboration that goes into it. I can't speak for everybody, but I feel very confident that our half the state's assets are being well taken care of. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, Hank. We're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Okay. You like the rats? I didn't think I wanted to mention. Okay, well, we had you down for 10 to 15 minutes. Is that good?
We could go less if you wish.
I know everybody would be disappointed if you didn't. But,
I don't think I would be Chair Reardon.
All right. Well, thank you for being here. You aren't building a lot of buildings, are you?
Good afternoon.
Chair Reardon, Vice Chair Alonzo Leon, Vice Chair Wisnet, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Patrick Crane. I'm the Director of Community Colleges and Workforce Development with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I will provide a brief overview of the process that we use for selecting capital construction projects and a little bit of information about them. John Wyckoff from the Oregon Community College Association has already referenced a number of these points, but just to reiterate, the way community college capital projects are ranked does differ from the universities. And Kyle will go through the university process after this, but a couple of key points to keep in mind. One, community college capital construction projects are funded only by 11G bonds or lottery funds. There are other bonds available for the universities, but these are the only two funding sources available with state funds for community college capital projects.
Could you remind us, I don't think bond types every day, so if you could remind us of the bond, if it's 11G, what is that compared to the other? There's about three types of bonds, and just kind of redefine those for me.
Chair Reardon, I only deal with the 11G bonds and only superficially, so I would be happy to provide you detailed information after the committee.
Chair Reardon, for the record, Kyle Thomas, Director of Legislative and Policy Affairs for the HEC. There are three types of Article 11 bonds that universities can access. Colleges have access to one type of Article 11 bonds, the 11G bonds that Patrick just referenced. There are Article 11Q bonds. Those are bonds that are 100% issued by the state, and 100% of the debt service is paid by the state, and that does not require a match on the part of the institutions. The Article 11G bonds require a match of 50% on the part of the institution. After that, the portion that the state bonds is picked up 100% by the state, the principal and the debt service on the remainder of that amount.
Okay.
The third type is Article 11F bonds. That is more akin to a university for the state essentially co-signing a request by the university. The university has access to the state's bonding authority, their general obligation bonds, but the university is responsible for 100% of the principal and debt payments. Ultimately, because of the way those bonds are issued, if the university were for whatever reason unable to make that payment, the responsibility would fall to the state. As a consequence of using its GO authority.
Thank you for that reminder.
Just two other points to mention quickly. Colleges may not have more than one project approved for 11G bond funding. They're awaiting match at a time. Finally, for biennium beginning in July 1st, 2015, the aggregate amount can only be $8 million. So again, John referred to this earlier, but that's the maximum state match, regardless of the actual cost of the capital project at the community college. Just to walk through the process in a little bit more detail, and this took place in 2016 in preparation for this session. The due diligence templates were sent out in February to the community colleges. These had 8 overarching categories and 39 separate questions that the colleges were asked to respond to when making their proposals and describing their projects. The colleges themselves determined which ones were Tier 1 and Tier 2. Those were then submitted to the HEC in March. As was mentioned earlier, these projects were then scrutinized, and the materials were worked with by a member of CCWD staff to try and mask the identity of the projects to the extent possible, so that there would be as close to a blind review process as possible, and the projects could be judged on their merit and how well they met the criteria identified in the due diligence report. A capital construction work group made up of myself and 4 community college presidents all reviewed the projects and scored them independently. We then met, reviewed our rankings, discussed them, and then the average of our scores, our average of our total scores, was how we arrived at the first ranking. As mentioned earlier, this was then taken to the Oregon President's Council. They reviewed the list. Their recommendation was to move Umpqua Community College to the top of the list. Their recommendations were carried forward to the HEC Funding and Achievement Subcommittee. The HEC Funding and Achievement Subcommittee accepted their proposal for rank order, and that's how it was submitted in the agency request budget.
I've never seen that before. It's really impressive because it just, I've always had the vision of these people just sitting around the room and kind of arguing about how wonderful their projects were. And this is really, the blind review is really, really interesting.
Yeah, Chair Reardon, again, John mentioned this earlier, but collegiality is a core principle for how the community colleges engage with each other. This process existed certainly before my time, and, you know, as he mentioned earlier, going together to help support each other's projects and the ones that don't necessarily make it through in one biennium, helping support them in the following biennium is a way that the community colleges have worked together historically. Yeah. Finally, you've heard about these projects. This actually puts them in order and identifies the amount of 11G bonds requested and the total project cost going down the list. Again, just to reiterate, $8 million is the total 11G bond requests that each project is eligible for. The total request for these projects in the governor's request budget comes to just over $75 million. And finally, just for information and reference, this is the amount of the community college general fund funded debt service from 2005-07 up through 17-19. Be happy to answer any questions you may have, or Kyle Thomas can take over on the university side.
Are we maxed out on debt service, or?
I don't believe that we are. I think this is a function of the fact that the projects are capped at $8 million. They only started in 2005-07, and okay. You know, also as John said, there was one year where essentially the whole list was funded, and then another year where very few, if any, projects were brought forward. So. I think this is just how it is developed over time.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the typical length of the bond issuance? Is it 30 years, 15 years?
Chair Reardon, Representative Bynum, I believe it's 30 years, but I can confirm that and get back to you.
Any other questions? Well, sorry to make you wait around all afternoon for a short presentation, but it's really very interesting and helpful. So.
Chair Reardon, it's our pleasure.
All right, good. Thank you very much. Anybody in the audience that cared to step up? Or?
Kyle's going to present.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were...
As I said when I sat down, you can really skip me if you wish. it says Ben Cannon on your presentation. I'm mentioning
for doing
him
such
today.
A great job. I just saw it.
You'll probably have more questions than I have answers to because I am pinch hitting today, but we will get you responses as soon as we can. Just to quickly review the university capital process, it's a nearly a year-long process from start to finish that happens once during the course of the biennium, and it occurs in line with the current services budgeting process that the state engages in. Just to highlight a little bit about the process, steps 2 and 3, you can see the initial development and the ranking of the projects truly is in the hands of the universities. And while the universities might consider the HEC rubric in submitting their projects, the rubric itself, which I'll get to in a couple of slides, certainly very heavily considers the priorities that the institutions have and the tiers in which they rank their projects on a consolidated and collaborative basis. And once the universities submit, we have a university finance team that's headed by Andrew Rogers, our director, who couldn't be here today. And they meet to apply the rubric to those projects and create a staff recommendation to the commission. That's then adopted as part of the agency's budget request. That occurs around, it occurred in 2016 in August. And from that point, it becomes a matter for the governor's office to apply their own considerations and weightings and ranking in line with other state non-higher education bond priorities in determining ultimately which projects become a part of the GRB. Just briefly, there's a couple slides that follow here on just general principles that are applied by the HEC in considering projects. If you look at the top left box, it says that debt must support an ENG, an education and general purpose. What that means is that dorms and stadiums and parking garages, things like that, other major campus infrastructure that you might think of, generally does not apply. What we're talking about here for state bonding authority is typically buildings that serve a predominantly academic or research-based purpose. In the top right box, you see that future funding building needs should be reliably accounted for in campus planning, and the HEC wants to see that campuses are taking a long-term view of projects that result in buildings intended for long-term use. The bottom right corner is that HEC does consider energy efficiency improvements or improvements in use of campus space in its rubric. In the bottom left, particularly the last bullet point about developing or extending key competitive advantages is HEC looking at these projects in line with university academic and strategic plans. Just a couple more points on further capital principles that the HEC follows. We're not only looking at capacity in terms of campus density, but in capability to meet future workforce demand. That's the top left box. If you look at the bottom, the top right and bottom left, we examine partnerships, which may be cross-institutional, which may also be public-private partnerships in considering which projects get ranked in which order. And then in the bottom right, we also consider the fact that if a university has a particular strategic advantage in a specific area and that area aligns with the state's strategic needs, that becomes a part of the process and a consideration that the HEC makes. This slide shows the actual rubric and the actual weighting of some of the criteria that I just discussed. If you look at campus priority, which is the green box, and leveraging campus and external support, which is the second brown box on this slide, you see that they're worth 20 and 15 points respectively. And so these ensure that institutional priority weighting and institutional priority projects receive a more favorable rating just by virtue of the fact that these are the projects of the campus deems to be most important for their campus and community. Just to briefly describe a couple of the other points on the rubric, student support completion in the HEC priorities box. That's about enhancing and improving student classroom space or adding student service spaces. Deferred maintenance and cost savings, which has been discussed a little bit here today, primarily projects that are intended to extend the life of a building, improve energy efficiency, and make repairs. Life safety and code compliance is things like fire safety improvements, egress, issues that are brought up by companies which ensure campuses and institutions, and then the enhanced current effort box, which really is aimed at getting to the question of how does the project complement academic activity that's currently underway. This is the complete project list. The university's also already went over it in detail. So,
can I ask just one? There's one back slide. Why is there 20 points for campus priority? I mean, why would you even have a project that was up here if it wasn't a campus priority?
That's a great question, Representative Reardon, members of the committee. It would imply then that a campus can't have multiple projects that have the same priority, that would receive the same level of consideration. So if a project is at the top of an institution's list and is at the top of the university's consolidated list, that would score higher on campus priority than other projects that are sought by the campus that are lower down in the campus's own priority list. So it does ensure that, and many campuses, as you've heard today, for instance, OSU Cascades proposed numerous projects. Some of those projects were ranked by the institution as being of a higher priority. And so when HEC considered those projects in light of all the other projects it considers, it applied that weighting to the projects at the top of OSU's list.
Okay. Thank you. Well, Rep. Johnson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So, Kyle, in your second slide, you had at the top, it's got HEC capital principles and the scoring rubric development. Is that what you're referencing in this slide you were just explaining, the rubric, the scoring rubric? Meaning, is there a second determination or criteria around capital principles that define the project? And I'm that's not clear. I'm getting back to my comments that we had previously about energy certification standards that a certain campus could choose apparently on their own, and they could choose to adopt a LEED Gold versus a neighbor who might have a LEED Silver. They will have a different cost basis for those projects because the cost basis will be higher for one. Is there anywhere within this process where the HEC looks at the construction methodologies and means and materials that go into these projects? Or are those completely up to the university to determine at their own free will?
Representative Reardon, Representative Johnson, that is a great question. It's a question I don't have any answer to. So we will certainly get back to you.
The problem when you have guys that don't sit in the ways and means environment, suddenly you get exposed to this stuff. So those would be the questions I'd be pounding the table over. But I'll take it up with LFO, I think, is where we ought to have that conversation.
And I should point out that to the extent that there's university folks still behind me, I don't know if there are, but they might actually have the answer to that question.
No.
It appears they don't.
No,
so.
No,
we'll get a response there.
Well,
yeah.
Sure. It's not trivial. I mean, if we're allocating state resources for capital construction projects, yep. It would make sense that we're having apples to apples comparison as we talk about the amount of square footage, right. And other capital amenities that can be built for students. And if a campus or a student chooses to build at a different standard that will necessitate higher costs, I'm just saying, my question is why? And maybe there's an answer for that, but I just haven't heard it.
And I think that sounds like a really great question. We're not funding the entire project either, though, so maybe they could choose to use our base amount and as extravagant as they can afford to be beyond that. I don't know. It's a great question, though. Uh-huh. What standards?
Chair Reardon, Representative Johnson, maybe just to add a little bit more context, I now completely understand your question. It may actually be a difficult thing to get at because different campus spaces have different uses, and those uses imply different costs. For instance, buildings that are house more laboratory space are on the face of it more expensive per square foot. So it may be tough to parcel out the additional cost of those other kinds of efficiency improvements.
Agreed. I'll take it up with LFO. Thanks.
Vice Chair Alonzo Lamb?
Yes, if you can go back to that prior, can you elaborate a little bit on the 15 points for leveraging campus and external support? Is that having funding partnerships, or what? Can you elaborate and provide some more context?
Certainly, Chair Reardon, Representative Alonzo Leon, it certainly can be partnerships that lead to a sharing of costs related to the project, but it certainly goes beyond that as well. Partnerships that lead to improved educational experiences for students would I think probably be the broad category under which you could put any other kind of partnership that we would apply that ranking to, or that point system to. For instance, just to use I'm creating an example off the top of my head, but if a university partnered with a biotech firm to create some incubator space that would lead to more research and intern or externship opportunities for students, that is an example of a partnership that would likely be considered when evaluating a project.
Because it's getting the second highest points, so I just wanted to make sure I understood, because it seems like a pretty broad, statement.
Chair Reardon, Representative Alonzo Leon, it's also meant to ensure that a campus project is taking into account the needs of the community that the project is serving. So if the community itself is not supporting the project, or businesses or research interests or other community members aligned with the institution are not supporting the project, then this area of the rubric is meant to consider that.
Thank you.
Well, we're losing the crowd here, so we better wrap it up.
I'll just close by echoing the slide that Patrick put up for the community colleges, there's all this slide shows is the compounding effect of an increase generally in the amount of bonded debt service the state has applied to the community colleges, or to the universities, particularly over the last two biennia, as well as the cumulative effect of just the compounding of the number of projects over time, just for you to get a sense of the current annual or biennial state debt service obligation. And with that, we can conclude.
All right. Again, and well, thank you. I appreciate your being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
We will have, I'm closing this informational hearing. We do actually have hearings on bills on next Tuesday. So the next couple of times that we are together, the next couple of Tuesdays, we'll be hearing about bills and then working some bills. And it's going to be a pretty tight schedule. So if we could go ahead and get started. And then we're off the next couple of Thursdays. So that's the good news. So.
Oh, you're out of town.
Yeah.
Aren't you on a Thursday?
I'll be out of town. Rep Johnson's out of town, so.
Enriching experience, however.
And we're both in the same city, but different events. Okay. I know you're all excited about that, but our travel plans. I'm closing a meeting of the House Higher Ed Workforce Development Committee, and thank you all.
You're serious.
Committee, and thank you all.
You're serious.